So you may have noticed this, but the GOP campaign for the White House seems to be increasingly becoming a referendum on religion and government. The doctrines of separation of church and state and freedom of religion, originally conceived as a way of protecting religious practice in the new United States of the 18th century, are all being cast as tools of a so-called secular movement in this century trying to eradicate religion from public life altogether. In 50 years, we've actually gone from this rhetoric, from the first Catholic president, John F. Kennedy, who was very defensive about his faith.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute.
It's JFK in a speech back in 1960, and here's GOP candidate Rick Santorum referring to his personal outrage over that speech, even though it was given when he was about 2 years old.
And then very late in my political career, I had the opportunity to read the speech, and I almost threw up. You should read the speech. In my opinion, it was the beginning of the secular movement of politicians to separate their faith from the public square. And he threw faith under the bus in that speech.
According to Rick Santorum, JFK threw faith under the bus back in 1960, and we've been going downhill ever since. Did the framers ever intend to ban faith from the public square? Does enforcement of the Establishment Clause of the U.S. Constitution amount to a secular movement in the United States out to target and restrict members of faith communities? Joining us to help us understand this is Kenneth Davis, our good friend, author of I Don't Know or Don't Know Much About History. Ken Davis, welcome back to the program.
Always a pleasure. Good morning.
Explain to us, please, what the genesis is of freedom of religion and the separation of church and state doctrine. Freedom of religion is explicitly talked about in the Constitution. Separation of church and state is something that comes later.
That's correct. Now, first of all, let me say I read the JFK speech last night, and I did not lose my dinner. So I just want to be clear on that. But let's go to Civics 101 here. The Constitution, Article 6th. Republicans like to be fairly concerned with strict constructionism. No religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States, Article 6 of the Constitution. Fairly straightforward. They didn't want religion to be a test in any way. Then they create the First Amendment to the Constitution, which says that Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of a religion or the free exercise thereof. So two different ideas there. Government can't tell you how to pray or that you can't pray.
And government can't have its own official religion as well.
And the Senate debated this when they were debating the Bill of Rights and wanted to make America a Christian nation. And actually the House killed that idea. So we go back to this very fundamental idea that, yes, most of these men were Christians. I must say
the framers, you mean?
Most of the framers were Christians, but also, they were mostly white Anglo-Saxon Protestants.
And a lot of Unitarians in there as well.
Some Unitarians and some – I mean, we can get into deism and all that.
Well, let's look at the sort of logical and semantic issue here, because we're really talking about two principles that you've outlined here, which are all about protecting faith communities in the United States. That has become, in our time, tools for eradicating religion from the public square. First of all, how does that transformation take place?
Well – Let's go back to what the founders, the framers were thinking and what they were reacting to. First of all, they just fought a war, a long war against a country in which the head of state was also the head of church. They knew the history of England's bloody religious wars, and that's why this wasn't just a philosophical idea. This was a very, very important practical idea.
Nothing of the religious wars in Europe that involved the Catholic Church specifically, not the Anglican Church.
Well, the Anglican Church was also an argument with the Catholic Church. Remember that Queen Mary, who was called Bloody Mary, tried to reinstitute Catholicism after her father, Henry VIII, was king, and there was a long period of persecution in which Protestants were burned at the stake in England. Then that was reversed under Elizabeth, and Catholics became the persecuted.
But let's bring it forward and show a little respect to Rick Santorum's faith, if not his digestion, let's just say, referring to the JFK speech. I mean, is it not the case that in a free society, people of faith can do all kinds of things according to their faith, and the government has no business getting involved in that.
Exactly. And that is the whole crux of the issue of separation of church and state, which, by the way, is not a phrase that comes from the Constitution. It comes from a letter that Thomas Jefferson wrote while he was president. He said that there should be a wall of separation between church and state. It's an old idea. It wasn't his idea originally. But Jefferson and Madison chiefly really believed that the government had no business in people's religious affairs.
Right. Now,
and that's what Kennedy says in this speech as well.
But still, we're a ways away from that now. And I think a lot of people in faith communities believe, and you know, we can argue about the genesis of those beliefs, but they view this wall as a threat to them, that this wall has gotten too big. It's not a wall against the state, it's a wall against them. How do they see that?
I think that this really comes out of the 1980s religious right movement, the rise of the moral majority. I mean, after Kennedy's election, and by the way, that the Catholic issue was a big issue. We kind of push it to the side then nowadays, but it was a big issue back then. And he really did have to address this issue because he was going into states where he was losing a lot of votes to Protestant voters because of the Catholic issue.
And part of what Kennedy was saying was, I'm going to put a wall up around my Catholicism so that you're not freaked out about it.
That's right. The fear was exactly the other side, that Kennedy, as a Catholic, and this was an old fear in America, was going to be an agent of the Pope. This goes back to the beginning of American history.
In fact, the Catholic was not the term they would typically use. They call them Papists.
Papists. That's absolutely right. There was a belief in the 19th century that Catholics, Irish Catholics in particular, were coming to America and would actually overturn the government and build a new Vatican in America.
This was a real
political idea at the time, a cranky notion.
Indeed, and the story of Catholics in America and their political empowerment is really a narrative that informs some of the rhetoric coming out of the GOP, particularly Rick Santorum. We're going to talk about that after a short break. We are with here our good friend Kenneth Davis, author of Don't Know Much About History, historians thinking about religion and government and the public square. What do you think about all this? Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or post a comment at thetakeaway.org. We're exploring some of the rhetoric of the GOP campaign for the White House, particularly some of the remarks from Rick Santorum, who refers to a 1960 speech by then-Senator, running for president John F. Kennedy, speaking to a bunch of ministers down in Houston and talking about how separation of church and state, in his view, had to be absolute. Our guest is Ken C. Davis, author of Don't Know Much About History. As a historian, Ken, what is the story of Catholics' emergence into political power, particularly in light of today where candidates lead with their religion? That was exactly the opposite of what JFK did back in 1960.
No, and to your earlier point about what the fear was, he specifically addresses that. One of the fears then was that public money was going to go to parochial, and in the sense that that meant Catholic schools then. And so he was addressing that fear of public money going to Catholic schools. Now we have the exact opposite, where people want more public money going to religious institutions.
The faith-based initiatives of George W. Bush, sure. Absolutely.
So it's a real turnabout, in a way, coming from the same people who once feared John F. Kennedy in many respects, the evangelicals.
Evangelicals, exactly. They were the ones who feared the Catholic rise. You're exactly right. That's a good point. Now, one of the things that's interesting here is that a lot of people cast some of this rhetoric from the GOP as a kind of a wedge issue, an opportunistic sort of inflaming of passions. But the way you're describing it here, we seem to be pivoting on a really huge founding principle of American democracy regarding the relationship between religion and government. Is that changing in the United States in a big way?
Well, I think that we have a myth in America, like we have a lot of myths of American history, that this Christian nation myth that we were all here and came for religious freedom and it's been wonderful ever since. That's a myth because Christianity in America was primarily Protestant Christianity, and it did reject other groups. Freedom of religion usually meant freedom from my religion, not anyone else's. That's why Thomas Jefferson and James Madison did write the Virginia Statute for Religious Freedom.
And, of course, America was an open place. People were going to places that, you know, in many cases were not inhabited, but often were inhabited by Native Americans, of course, and setting up their own sort of, all right, brand new plan here. It was very different from Europe.
It was very different from Europe, but in almost every case where there's an offshoot religion, and Mormonism
indeed
is a perfect example of this, they were treated with fear, often with violence. The founders of the Mormon Church are murdered. The governor of Missouri issues what is known as the extermination order to get Mormons out of Missouri.
So that's a huge issue. That explains why Rick Santorum leads with his Protestant evangelical religious rhetoric, because that's the norm in America. And Mitt Romney, with his Mormonism, is actually keeping that sort of in the background. He's a little more like JFK here.
In a sense, he is, and he tried to make that speech 4 years ago, Mitt Romney did, but didn't quite come off as well as JFK's did. But the I think the bigger point is here that there was a pivot in the 1970s and into the 1980s with the rise of the moral majority under Jerry Falwell and the Pat Robertson wing of the Republican Party. Don't forget, Pat Robertson, a televangelist, was a serious candidate
and
for the Republican candidate.
Still with us. Well, it's an interesting pivot, and we're always glad to have you here to help us explain and understand these sorts of things. Kenneth Davis, author of Don't Know Much About History. We know more about it now. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.